Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 515 for comics originally released on June 21st, 2017. Now, starting us off in DC is Aquaman number 25. Now, this is an exercised anniversary issue, and probably, you know, with the Rebirth stuff, 25 is for the first time an actual anniversary issue, because they're coming out so damn fast. 25 in about a year, so okay, that works. I'll go with that. Dan Abnett is, of course, still writing, but we've got a new artist on board, Stepan Sage. I know it looks like Cedric, but I saw a video that CBR did a couple of years back at Comic-Con, and that's how they pronounce it, so I'm going with that.
And I have heard him introduced as Stepan Sage on podcasts, and he does not correct them, so I'm assuming it's right.
The bigger question is, does he correct them if they go Cedric? Because I think that's true. Incorrect, but he may just be really polite. And understanding that, you know, people like me really butcher names on a regular basis. I've been a fan of Stepan for a while. He's done some great stuff over at Top Cow. He's got a couple of direct-to-trade titles that are just beautiful to look at.
Yeah, Sunstone and Death Note is one of them. Right?
It wasn't Death Note. It was Death something or other, though.
Yeah. And he's abandoned the creator owned floppy, and now he goes straight to trade.
Yeah, both him and his wife. She's got Bloodstain or something like that.
Yeah.
And again, beautiful looking books, good story, a lot of fun. Enjoyed that stuff. So I was excited when he was coming on Aquaman. End of last issue, it looked like Aquaman was not doing so hot, and that they had put this shield or barrier around Atlantis, kind of trapping Aquaman inside Atlantis and Mira, Tula, and presumably Garth over in Titans outside of it. And I really like the dynamic between Aquaman and Mira, so I'm like, I don't know about this. So I was a little skeptical coming in, to be honest. But I really thought this was a fun issue. You know, there was an aspect of the politics and whatnot they were doing with Atlantis that they've been doing for a while, but it was starting to work a little better for me than what they'd been doing previously, both in this volume and other ones. But we're really, in this issue, starting to get to know Atlantis, the city, in a way that I really don't feel that I've ever gotten before. Even though there's been plenty of stuff set in the city, you don't really get out of the royal throne room or whatever that often. So when we get to the point where Aquaman is more or less doing kind of a Batman shtick, underwater and whatnot, with all the coal and all this, you know, the fish and all this stuff, it was fun to see kind of almost Aquaman's take on Batman. It gave this, again, a gritty city vibe in a way that I don't feel we've really gotten from Atlantis before. When they introduce Dolphin, are you familiar with that character?
Is that the blonde girl?
That's the blonde girl.
Yeah.
Who they never once called Dolphin in here, so okay, fair enough to not know exactly who I was talking to. Talking about there. She goes way back, and obviously has been paired up with Aquaman at times.
Is she a love interest of his?
Potential love interest. And it's funny because the way this issue ends, with Mira going to find Aquaman, having thought he was dead, knowing he may now be alive, with that, you know, even if she has to personally raise Atlantis herself, she'll do it kind of determination. The splash page there at the end, no pun intended, where she's diving down and Dolphin and Aquaman are kind of swimming up, holding hands, really sets the implication that Mira may end up seeing Dolphin as a rival for Arthur's love, whether that's truly the case or not. Because I don't think Aquaman would not be true to Mira. That feels like it would ring a little false. Not to say he wouldn't get, you know, close and attached in some way to Dolphin on some level, just not romantically, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, but I think that's what they're telegraphing.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, in the pages leading up to the end there, I think they were kind of going in that direction, and And as she was storming off to save her man, I was thinking, well, that's what we're going to be. She's going to be walking in on something that may or may not be innocent.
But I agree with that entirely. I think they're telegraphing a confrontation of some sort eventually between Mira and Dolphin. Don't know how that would resolve, what the status quo will be, but it would be fun if Dolphin sticks around as a member of the supporting cast, whether as a thorn in Mira's side or as a staunch ally. I don't know, and kind of don't care. I think they could have a lot of fun either way. But there was a lot that happened in this issue that was kind of clearly starting like a new chapter in the overall Aquaman adventures, yet it flowed beautifully out of the preceding story, so it's not like the other stuff ended, boom, let's go in a new direction. I mean, they evolved the title. And it feels like they're focusing a lot more on Atlantis than some other runs, even more so than previously in this run. But unlike a lot of past attempts to focus heavily on Atlantis, which has happened numerous times, I was really kind of enjoying what they were doing here. Now, part of that may have been that the art was just, you know, great to look at, really worked for me.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't like it was a rendering of Atlantis and you just kind of filled in the blanks. This is a detailed, this art is just off the charts fantastic. I mean, it's worth the price of admission alone. Just the detail of the different politicians, that they're very well rendered and just really nice designs, and the city itself. There's some really beautiful city shots throughout here. And oh yeah, it sucked me in too. And I don't usually like that sort of bureaucracy stuff, but
exactly.
It was really good.
They took stuff that isn't necessarily radically different than what they've been doing both in this volume and previous volumes, but the take was just enough of a different spin, and the visuals were a lot of fun, and it was paired with getting to know the city that these politics are in versus just kind of, it felt more like city politics than national politics, I guess, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Where it really is going to have an impact on the day-to-day lives of everybody here. And again, I felt we saw more of Atlantis than just kind of swimming by that we usually get. I think this could be a great jumping on point potentially for people who want to check out Aquaman. I think it's certainly worth giving a look if this sort of a thing appeals to you. It's got, again, a mix of some politics, almost, I want to say if you're into like a Game of Thrones or Camelot or those sorts of things, this may have something for you. It's got a little bit of that fantasy, a little bit of that science fiction stuff blended with the politics, blended with not quite the super heroics, but not the super heroics. It was just a really fun issue.
And there's just an establishing panel of a lighthouse that looks kind of like a barber pole. It's got the red and white stripes next to a little cottage on top of a cliff overlooking the water. And it's a beautiful panel, and it's just, I would say 20% of the page, maybe, if that. And the amount of time that he took to detail that out and to give it depth and beauty, I was just like, wow, this guy is so good that a tiny, not even a splash page, not even your money shot type of panel, is so good. It's the type of talent that you see that makes you angry because you know you're never going to be that good at anything as he is at art.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe that's just me. But
no, sometimes I get it.
I see sometimes I think they see people that are so talented and I'm just like, oh, that just makes me so mad. You're so good. You were so good at this, and this is exactly what you should be doing because this makes me care about an Aquaman comic that I didn't care about before. I was kind of bored with it and, you know, had dropped off. And now I'm like, well, for even if we just talk about bureaucracy and politics, but the art is this beautiful, I have to read it anyway. And I'm jumping back on for the art and hope that the story maintains this level of interest for me.
Well, I think part of it is Adam had been writing a good story, but an artist can either add to that, deliver what's on the page and of the script and nothing more, or sometimes get a little in the way. And I feel here that Stepan is able to infuse these characters with a bit more personality, a bit more acting and expressions and stuff like that. In that page with the lighthouse, the next panel where we see Mira, she seems really down, really sad. He sells that.
Yeah, he emotes these characters so well. There's the dolphin character, you know, she has a smirk on her face at one time, and you know, and it's a tiny little postage stamp panel inset of her little smirk, but you know exactly what's on her mind. And just from the way that he emotes these characters, I believe it was last week you were referencing where there was a blankness, deer in the headlights look to some of the characters in one of the books we were reviewing. You will not find that here. They are alive and human, and it's what great art is supposed to do.
It's that other end of that extreme.
Yeah.
Because we've got Tula there, and in her second shot there, there's almost a slight shrugging of the shoulders, but there's no sense of movement. You get the body language, not just how it's drawn, but how it's meant to be conveyed. There's subtle things in there, and maybe I'm just reading a lot into it, but I feel there's more to read into it than some other comics where it's still, it's lifeless, it's that deer in the headlights, it's like you startled the actors and then took the snapshot for the slideshow.
Yeah, and there's a fight that occurs, and you feel the wind being knocked out of these characters, and it's not just bam, biff, pow, you know, to tell you that there's a fight happening. You see the air being pushed out of their lungs and them recoiling back from the. It's just great art, and you know, I'm sure there are other artists that are up to this level, but they haven't really captured my attention as well as this one has. I really found it. It really pulled me in. It really made me enjoy this comic a lot because of the art.
Well, and I think it may force Abnett to kind of up his game a little bit, because I don't recall some of the things we're talking about here in the previous issues, or if they were, I just didn't pick up on them. But like when we're back at the throne room and the new king is basically telling the Reverend Mother, okay, you can leave now. And she's like, I'm not quite done, but she thinks better of it. And just seeing the expressions change, and she's like, okay, I'm backing out, kind of a deal. The politics play better. You know, I was really pleased with this. Solid A rating. Definitely recommend it if you've been looking for a jumping on point for Aquaman. I think this is probably one of the best ones in recent years.
Yeah, I was waffling between an A and an A-. I've convinced myself it's an A just by talking it out a little bit and just looking at re-lingering on some of these panels again. And it doesn't, I mean, it's just really, really top-notch stuff. And I know he's a prolific artist. I'm sure that he's not going to be able to maintain a twice-a-month schedule, so I assume that he'll jump off for an arc when it catches up to him. But I'm on it for the ride, and we'll see what happens after that.
On that point, one, I'm not sure if it's still twice monthly or not. I honestly don't remember. Two, even if it is, I think he's prolific enough he could keep up that pace. I don't think the guy sleeps.
He would have to drop his creator-owned stuff, I would imagine, then.
He was doing the creator-owned stuff concurrently with, I think it was Witchblade.
I don't know. I mean, his stuff was coming out pretty sporadically. They weren't all coming out monthly.
I think if we were to go through the release schedule, it may be a little more sporadic than I'm thinking, but I think it's a lot more consistent and constant than you're thinking.
Somewhere in the middle. Then.
I look at the he's on like the fifth trade for, whichever one of his, books it was, his trades or whatever, and they're decent sized thickness. And he's been doing he seems to manage his time better than the average artist, is all I'm saying. If anyone could do a biweekly thing for a while, I think he's got a shot at it. I hope so.
I think you could really, this could really build the audience, because I think, folks check this out, they're going to be, wowed by the art. The story was good. And if like you say, this one fantastic creator fuels another fantastic creator to, and they just kind of up each other's game, man, we could be seeing a real rise in a premier title for DC. And I hope so. But yeah, I'm gonna stick with it for a while.
I don't know if Stepan has done much else, if anything else, for DC. Certainly, I don't know that he's done an ongoing book. So I think that was a good, you know, pickup for DC. Again, great issue, great job all the way around. Definitely worth checking out. Shall we move over to Marvel?
Yeah.
This is Peter Parker, : The Spectacular Spider-Man, number one. I emphasize the colon because I think a previous one was a comma there. Just, you know, grammatical difference. It's about the only way to tell some of this apart on the covers because they don't bother with, you know, volume numbers, little things like that. I will admit I went into this thinking, do we really need another Spider-Man title? This is by Chip Zdarsky and Adam Kubert. And there's a couple of parts of this I really did enjoy. I thought it was great seeing Peter Parker hanging out with Johnny Storm. Haven't seen that for a while. It kind of brings Peter a little bit more down to earth. And frankly, it's just nice to see Johnny somewhere. I don't feel he's gotten enough screen time since Secret Wars. He's been showing up in like Uncanny Inhumans and a few things there, but just in the background. They brought in a couple of other characters. Ant-Man is inexplicably in New York instead of Florida, where we had last left him, and apparently had damaged his helmet somehow, and I have no idea when or where Ant-Man fought Orca and damaged his helmet. I don't think they've told that story, but I'm behind on my reading. Maybe they have, and I just don't know, but it's kind of a who cares, but we actually get a footnote there that's not particularly helpful, mainly because it's talking about Spider-Man's extra arms. Yeah, whatever, it's... If you haven't been around long enough to have read issue 100, then you probably don't care. This just had a bit of a different tone to it than what we've been getting over in Amazing Spider-Man. And a lot of this issue was kind of world building and setting up of stuff, particularly, Mason, I guess it was, who is the not evil brother of, the Tinkerer. And just, you know, as if we needed another tech genius to supply the heroes and stuff like that. He was fun. It worked out well. I'm curious what his storyline is going to be. But the other character we get in there is Uatu Jackson or whatever, who's named after the Watcher. He's, of course, from Horizon Labs over in Peter Parker, over in Amazing Spider-Man, Superior Spider-Man, and I don't remember if he made it back into Amazing, but whatever. A lot of characters kind of pulled in here, some fun stuff, but it didn't totally gel for me. It felt a little at odds with what we've been getting over in Amazing Spider-Man, and I felt the ending just kind of came out of nowhere with a character getting introduced on the last page, and it just felt like a cheap ploy to get us to read the next issue to figure out what's going on there. So I was frankly a little disappointed by the lead story, and then we get to the backup story, which felt really... the dialogue for Spider-Man felt forced, frankly a bit lame. The whole point of this thing of Black Widow inexplicably trying to test Spider-Man's spider sense or whatever for this agent, it's like, who is he? Why should we care? And frankly, I don't. It felt like this should lead into something, but I've got no idea where it would lead into it or why or how this really fits in with any of the Black Widow stuff we've seen lately, because it doesn't. And this was one of those cases where the story ending on the word end with an exclamation point implies it's not going anywhere. And I'm like, well, why did you waste my time with it? It was one of those I would have liked the issue, which was $4.99, better at, certainly at $2.99, but even $3.99 if they dumped what I felt was a worthless backup story. That was just, you know, I went into this wondering, do we need another Spider-Man title? And I'm not going to say that the answer is no, but I'm going to argue that this isn't the other one we might need if we do indeed need one.
Okay, you're totally wrong.
Okay, convince me.
You, of course, are entitled to your opinion. I think this is heads and shoulders above the Amazing Spider-Man. Just one issue in. Full disclosure, I am half in the bag for Chip Zdarsky as a huge fan of his, and he is an artist first and writer second. But I enjoyed his Howard the Duck run very much, and I really like his sensibility here. This is the Peter Parker I want to read. I like this a lot. Now, when they when they introduced Rebecca London, I got a little upset because I'm like, hey, what about his girlfriend and kid, his wife and kid? And I'm like, oh, wait a minute, that's Renew Your Vows. That's a different different world, different version of Marvel. And I get my Spider-Man confused sometimes because I read them and they blend together. But also Head and Shoulders above Amazing Spider-Man is Renew Your Vows, by the way. So those two Spider-Men are great. And if you want to lose one, let's retire Amazing for a little while, or retire the creator for a while. This has a sense of fun. This has a sense of I love his editor's notes, you know, that he kind of took care of himself. Kind of tried to be a little too funny sometimes, but I did appreciate the attempts at bringing you in. He's trying some things. He's obviously got some ideas he wants to incorporate into these issues on his take on Spider-Man and his world. And I think it'll be fun. And I'm going to keep reading it. I think the art was a little wonky in places, and I'm not sure which Kubert I like the most. And how many Kuberts are there practicing in comics now?
Currently, I think just the two brothers, but I could be wrong. Okay.
And so I get him confused. Some, I think one I like a little better than the other. And this one had some issues, but all in all, it was really fun. The other backup was a little forgettable. You're going to have a number one and a $4.99 price tag, and you're going to throw a backup story on there. Yeah, sometimes they're pretty lame. I think they were lame. What was the last $5 one that we had another horrible backup story in there that we didn't like? I can't remember which one it was, but it seems to be pervasive in the Marvel U. So, but yeah, that main story I liked the intro. I liked that first issue, and I'm excited for it.
Okay, very different take on it than I had. That's cool for me. Like I said, it felt a little forced. It felt like it was trying to carve its own area for Peter Parker, and he's a busy enough guy that not really seeing Parker Industries or a lot of those supporting cast characters here, this just felt at odds with it.
Which I think is good, because I think that was what bogging down the other book, and I would like him to just kind of just shelve that. And he, you know, if Slott wants to continue to hammer that storyline, that's fine, but I don't care anymore.
Well, and I think that's a case of the same thing that you loved didn't work for me. You know, we came at it from very different angles. And as a result, that's why I think we came out of it with very different opinions. We'll see how this goes. We'll see how this gets, you know, how the market reacts to it, how it gets received.
Yeah, it's the third Spider-Man title that's out, so it's going to be tough.
Well,
it's going to be tough sledding.
The right? Second Peter Parker one, but the fifth Spider-Man title, well, there's Amazing Spider-Man, there's Spider-Man with Miles Morales, there's Ben Reilly, the Scarlet Spider, whatever his title is.
Yeah, it doesn't count.
Why not?
Because it's not Peter Parker or Spider-Man.
We could do a genetic test, and I think it'd come back that it is. Granted, it's fictional characters, so doing the genetic test a little hard, but my point is Spider-Man looking dudes.
We're not going Spider-related. I mean, Spider-Man titles.
Okay, Spider-Man 2099 has Spider-Man in the thing. I mean, my point is there's enough Spider-Guys going around that tossing another one in the mix is a little bit of a gamble. This, at least, I think, is justified a little bit more than, say, you know, Ben Reilly and 2099 and all that Definitely. Stuff.
Yeah, those can go.
But I think they've oversaturated the market. And for me, this was just a so-so issue. Not bad, not great, little unfocused. It was fun seeing a few characters pulled in, one or two new ones or whatever, but the art didn't really connect with me. It was hard to tell how tall this Mason dude was, because he seems like about 10 feet. It just didn't click with me. Maybe it will as it goes on, but maybe it won't. I'm glad you liked it more than I did. For me, C-.
Ooh. Yeah, I'm going to B+, liked it a lot more than you. And I don't know. I mean, I guess, of course, I really enjoy the Miles Morales, and I really enjoy Renew Your Vows, and I really enjoy this. All the rest of the Spider and Spider-related, I've kind of I've moved on from. So maybe if I was reading more, it would make it feel more crowded. That's possible.
I think that's part of the difference there, is I'm reading more of it, so Spider-Man seems a bit more – Spider-Men seem a bit more ubiquitous, because that title's starting up soon, miniseries. but also I think I'm enjoying Amazing Spider-Man more than you are. So I think what we're looking for and wanting out of Spider-Man titles right now is a bit different. And that's just a quandary that all the publishers and creators just kind of have to deal with. Not everything is going to work for everybody, and the same reasons it doesn't work for somebody is the reason it does for somebody else. So kind of the more focused they go in with the game plan as to what their target audience is, kind of sort of the better, because you can't be all things to all people.
Where do we think this will land on the charts? Will this be, I'm thinking top 20, but I don't know if it'll crack the top 10.
First issue, maybe. Second, third issue, certainly by the fourth, I expect it down in the 30,000s. It's the second tier Spider-Man book is how it's going to be seen, whether it should be or not.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. So I was just talking about his debut.
A debut? I'd have to look at how many variants it had.
I'd be curious. I don't think it'll be a top 10, but it might.
I think it'll do okay, but Marvel first issues are kind of softening because they do so many and the way they promote them. Yeah, we'll see. Again, I'm curious how the market reacts to this. Maybe they'll like it more than I did. Maybe they won't. Don't know. We shall find out. Shall we move on to our other book of the week?
Yeah.
This is Crosswind number 1 from Image Comics. It is written by Gail Simone, and we've got Kat Staggs as the illustrator. They are both co-creators on this. And I'm just going to say from the outset, this really didn't work for me. I felt the story took too long to get moving. I thought the first scene with the hitman, it was okay. I'd read it before either in the back of one of the other Image books or so it's like I knew what to expect there, so it didn't really wow me. Matter of fact, we may have even talked about it either offline or on one of the episodes or whatever, those first four pages or something. But then once we hit like the sixth page, we switched to the other character, and from there it kind of fell apart on me, in my opinion. Again, might have worked better for you, but this soccer mom or whatever, just, it seemed cliche. Clearly the stepmother, the kid doesn't like her. Oh, she's got what seems to be possibly an abusive, you know, husband or whatever, who's certainly very demeaning to her or whatever. This whole June bug nickname just felt overly cutesy. And frankly, the husband seemed like a real jerk. Her life seemed really messed up and kind of horrible, and not in any sort of way that made me root for her. And it took so long for the issue to get to the point where that premise kicks in of an inexplicable event strikes and two random strangers, their bodies, souls, and lives are switched to potentially deadly effects. It's Freaky Friday meets Goodfellas, is what the solicit says. And yeah, I'll agree it was inexplicable, all right. It just kind of happened. And they spent enough time presumably trying to get us to know and like these characters, and I didn't like them. And some of that's the story. A lot of that for me was the art. This is art that I felt was very uneven, and there were parts of it that were good. There were parts of it that just, it felt like it was art that was traced over computer-generated figures or photo-manipulated to take a building, kind of ink blotch it up, and then draw lines around it to make it look kind of comic booky. And I'm not saying that's what they did, I'm saying that's what it felt like to me. And there were a couple of panels in particular where it had a overly referenced or posered as studio used not so well vibe to it, that it was really kind of kicking me out of the story, and that may have been why I didn't attach to either character. So when it got to that point where that premise point happens, it was too late for me. I'd already kind of checked out, you know, how and why these two characters switch places. Didn't know, didn't care. And I don't know if this is a miniseries. No, actually, I do know. It's this mind-bending new ongoing series. So the series might be ongoing, but I'm probably off-going. I may have a few more on pre-order, at which point I'll see if it improves for me. But at this point, if I continue with it, it's going to be more out of curiosity to see how it goes and to see how the storytelling style either evolves or doesn't. But it didn't work for me.
Yeah, I think I like the story. I know I like the story a lot more than I like the art. There was some definite photo referenced that in a bad way type of poses in there. To you know, some of them reminded me of when you get the Facebook ad or something where they say, you know, turn your picture into a cartoon.
Yes.
And I thought, man, that's exactly what some of these look like. You know, just they just took the photo and then have the Photoshop presets to convert it to a cartoon version of that. And I noticed that a lot. So the art's a little bit lacking. I mean, it had some good areas, but there was a lot of those things that kind of you go across and you're just like, ooh, so it's pretty amateurish. I like the Freaky Friday aspect, especially for her, because I hate her husband so much. And they hammered that home a couple of times, probably one too many times. We get it. The dinner's important. We get that she screws up a lot. And then you berate her. I don't know if we had to go back to the well multiple times to establish that. I already hated him. And then we went back and did it again. I think what we're trying to do is just get to the reveal and the switch in this issue and not go any further. So we had to stretch it out a little bit.
One, I think that was a mistake. And two, the whole, he's a real jerk, the husband. She's now switched places with a hitman who's not going to put up with any of that stuff.
So it should be fun. That should be fun.
Well, it should be short-lived for the husband, particularly.
Now, the other way where we kind of see, you know, she's not equipped to deal with gangster life, dead bodies, stuff associated with being a mob hitman. So
what makes you say that?
And so I'm curious how that is going to play out, but I'm not as interested in that storyline as I am in her kind of being, you know, them taking that husband out. Mm-hmm. I think that dinner is going to be epic, with, you know, that dinner that's so important. And his boss is going to be there, and that hitman is going to help her find her strength.
Well, he doesn't need to help her find her strength. He's in her body. It's going to go. The dinner will go poorly. The boss will leave. It seems to have damaged the husband's career. He yells at her. Hitman in the body gets sick of it and wastes the husband. That seems like the trajectory they're on.
I'm hoping it's a little more than that, but
it's an ongoing series. It better be more than that.
And they're all ongoing until they're not, especially in the creator-owned, especially in the non-Big Two. They're all pitched as ongoing.
Even in the Big Two, the ongoing series lasts, what, 5 issues?
Yeah.
Miniseries tend to last longer. That's several another problem.
Several times they have, yeah. I like her story a little bit better. I'm curious. I hope they do some zigs and zags that I'm not expecting, and it doesn't feel as I don't hope they don't project it the way it kind of seems like it's going to go. But you know, it's Gail Simone. She's pretty good. So I've enjoyed some of her stuff over the years. So I think there'll be some fun stuff in here. I think they stretched this out to get to that reveal without going any further in this first issue, and it probably could have shaved 5 to 10 pages out of this. And moved the story forward a little further.
Yeah, I just, they needed to have time to get to know the characters before they swapped. I get it. I guess if I were going to do the body swap story, what I would do is I would start it at a psychiatric hospital where you've got a doctor who's explaining to another doctor, all of these people have come in. They all claim they've swapped. We've finally gotten your patient and my patient. Are the ones who seem to have swapped with each other out of all these people. We've now got one we can see both sides of. Go with that for the full thing. Oh, geez, I guess they're crazy. Maybe they're not. Don't know. And then have the reveal at the end be, at that point, one of the doctors swaps. You know what I mean? So you can set up the whole premise and explore it while getting to know what you don't realize at first is going to be one of the lead characters in the thing. Whereas here, when they switched away from the hitman to the housewife, it just kind of meandered, and we're getting some of the husband and all of this. It's like, I don't see how all the pieces fit together, and I'm not really caring too much.
Yeah, I mean, the reasons why, I hope that doesn't take too long, because I don't think that matters. But I think they probably need to touch on it a little bit as to why these two and what caused this switcheroo.
Mm-hmm.
I think that'll be fun. But yeah, I am more interested in really the next issue and just to see what they focus on. Are they going to continue to go back and forth between the characters? Are they going to just focus on one for a while? Are they going to go back even further and kind of maybe reset some things we may have missed? I don't know. I'm curious to see where it goes. But yeah, it's definitely not a perfect comic, but it's got enough to get me interested in reading that next issue.
And again, I probably may have one or two of them more pre-ordered, so I'll be along for the ride on that. I'm really curious how the art is generated for this, because we've got some stuff at the end with the pencil and ink kind of section there, where they show the line work and then the colored work. And I really think this is either referenced or it's using something like Poser or Daz Studio. And I don't mean that as a knock, because I think those are very good tools. I've been fans of those for probably 20 years in Poser's case, and Daz Studio came later. But there are just some panels in this issue where it felt really kind of kludgy on the art, muddied on the inking. There was one place in particular, I'm trying to think where it was, where just a couple of the characters, it was hard to sort of make out their eyes and stuff like that. It got lost in the shadow. But then on the same page, there was one or two renderings of the characters. It was just actually pretty good. So it was uneven. And I think probably the best art was there at the beginning with the Hitman scene. It's just, it was uneven. I'm going to be curious to see how this one gets received too. Maybe I'm in the minority. Maybe other people are going to just love it and stuff. But it's definitely one of those probationary ones that, depending what I think of the next issue or two, strong possibility it'll get dropped off my list.
Yeah, I think all the potential, I think, is in Juniper's storyline, so far, at least, has established. I think there's some stuff with the stepson and having the hitman in her body is going to snap him out of his emo lifestyle. I think those young toughs that were sexually harassing her after grocery shopping are in for a rude awakening in a scene or two in a future issue. So I look forward to that. So there's a lot of those things that we hammered home in this issue so much about her being put upon and not really fighting back, that those will all have to be rectified, and I think that'll be where the fun is. Yeah, they introduced, you know, that main character of Crucifix, whatever mm-hmm. his name was, and he had a very small part, but seems to be like a bigger part of the ongoing story going forward. So we'll see how he comes back in and maybe just notices how different Kason is than he should be, and maybe that's a story in itself. So yeah, I'm hoping that second issue continues some of the fun stuff that I enjoyed, and I can overlook some of the art issues that I had. For me, it is a solid B, and I'm going to read it a little bit more.
Yeah, for me, solid D rating. It just, like I said, didn't work for me. I can see a couple of different ways the story could go. A lot of those characters you said they set up around June's story. I see a lot of those characters getting killed in fairly short order. But by the time that happens, it may be that June in the hitman's body has decided to come home and see what's going on there. There are all these dead people. It's a known hitman. Oh no, there are a couple of different trajectories the story could go on, and I'm curious where they go, but it just, yeah, this issue, maybe it was just a bad start. Maybe they'll get into the groove for me in future issues. I don't know.
So we do agree on Aquaman. Today.
Yes, we do. But again, there are going to be some comics we agree on, some we don't. And a lot of it, I think, is the baggage we go in with. Because I think what our thoughts are on the current state of the Spider-Man titles definitely influenced our thoughts on Peter Parker. And I think, generally speaking, you're a lot more open to what Image is doing, and it's a bit more in your wheelhouse than it is in mine. So I'm not surprised that an Image book worked better for you than it did for me. That's just, again, different things for different people. Nothing right or wrong about it. I'm glad that the books I was kind of not happy with, that they worked better for you. Because I think it's rare for a book to be just truly really bad universally. It just may not work for some people, but other people, either because they're more into the genre or they've got different baggage coming in, whatever, it may click with them better.
Yeah. Now going forward, I have a heavy reading list this weekend as we prepare for our little bit of forward locking some of these episodes in. But I am so behind on my comics, and I'm pretty much maintaining DC and Marvel. But going forward, I really have to knock out some of these Image books and decide what I'm going to keep reading and what I'm not. Some of these back half books that I'm sampling a lot of these, but I've got to make these decisions because I'm not able to maintain the pace. I'm just not able to keep up, and it does no good for comics to just sit there and stack up. I just feel like it's not worth it. That shouldn't happen. So if I can't read them, I shouldn't be buying them.
No, I get what you're saying there. I am behind not only on my reading, but even on my inventorying. I haven't finished inventorying last week's this shipment that we just went through, because my process for that with Excel, I take the order forms from DCBS. I then add stuff off to the side of what I call the books, whatever, to copy that into my inventory, yada, yada. I also use the Collector Z's comic collector as well, but that's only for newer things. I haven't gotten my full collection in there. Probably only have 15-20%, maybe a quarter, not even a quarter of it. Maybe 20% to a quarter of my collections in comic collector. Anyways, I'm behind on some of the bookkeeping on the Excel side. So when I was gonna put the stuff into the inventory, it was all blank. It's like, well, I should update that for the last few months now, shouldn't I?
So, you know how you do the unboxing episodes with some of your subscription. It would be interesting to do a reverse process for your when you're processing stuff that comes in, and kind of the steps you take with your box comes in, you how you organize it, how you scan stuff in, where it goes. Let's just presuppose that it's been read, and then where does it go from there? And the system that it, like you're talking about collectors, with the Z on the end of it?
Yeah, Collector Z or whatever.
Okay. So you probably scan it into that database, and then it goes into a box, and then that box is recorded in your
Interested in that, I'd be happy to do an episode on that. I may actually post on the forum if people are curious, or maybe the Slack channel or something. Yeah, I've got a page on the website. Now, granted, I haven't updated it in probably 3 years. About my comic inventory system on the Excel side, I think this is more or less accurate, a little out of date, but not radically. In other words, I haven't overhauled the system since then, and I am still, like I said, I also use the Collector Z software in parallel. But then I also think I've got a couple of things, and they may actually be videos, where I did a video of barcode, the scanning of the barcode stuff into Comic Collector.
Oh, okay.
If you go to the comic book page website, there's the menu bar there at the top. If you go under Other, there is a John Mayo's inventory system that goes through and just kind of describes my Excel monstrosity. Then if you go further on that submenu there, there's the barcode scanning comics into Collectors Pro, adding pre-ordered comics into Collectors Pro, converting a new batch of comics from order, a couple of things. Because what I would do back when I did those is I would go through a box at a time, short box, which is what I use for organizing my recently read and so forth in before it gets into the collection proper. And that would take about an hour to go through a box. Now I'm doing it on a week-by-week basis or whatever. Again, that presumption of having read stuff helps. But I've got a Opticon 2001 tiny little barcode scanner. It's awesome. And the software for Collector's E is great, that comic collector stuff. It's just, again, a little time-consuming. But if people are curious about the process I use, I'd be happy to go into it.
I want to check that part out. Yeah, that's kind of neat. I know I'll never get there, so I can just look at your process and think, oh, that's how you're supposed to do it.
With the comic collector stuff, it is really as easy as going through a box. It's easier on newer comics than older comics. And just hit it with the barcode stuff, scan the thing. It takes a little, second or so to go get the cover and the information about the issue, which is why it's a slow process for a lot of comics. And then you've got your inventory. It's awesome. I've got their software also for books and for DVDs and Blu-rays. And for my Blu-ray and DVD collection, I literally just took this barcode scanner. It's about the size of like a matchbox or whatever. Went to the shelves where I've got all my DVDs, tip it out, hit the barcode, tip it out, hit the barcode. And I was through a shelf of things in minutes. So it's the software is maybe $50 if you get the really fancy version. And then there's like I think it's only $35 now, but then there's an update fee, a subscription thing, and you can stop subscribing for a while, resubscribe, and then update it then. So you can be strategic on that if you want to.
Oh, nice.
So it's, I've got some issues with its software, and the videos I did were on version 5. It's a few versions later now. And part of why I did them was to basically illustrate to the company that made the software that it's good, but there are a couple of things that are just kind of clunky if you're collecting it kind of my scale, which I admit is a minor use case. Few people get to that point.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know if you're not at your scale that it's that many people would use that software, would they?
I think there's a sweet spot.
Like, you got to be over 10,000 comics before you would want to invest in something like this, I would assume.
I don't know. I could see doing it for a few thousand, depending how much you're getting and how much you need to track it.
Does it track value?
No.
Okay.
No. But because the barcode includes variance information and stuff like that, it does help differentiate various variants.
Oh.
So
that would be interesting too.
You know, there's that. At some point, I'll go through my entire collection and get it in there, and that'll probably be at least a 2 or 3 pass process. One to go through each box and scan it in, and then a pass through the database, just looking for, hey, this doesn't look right or whatever type stuff. And then figure out how I would physically sort the books, how I would want them to be. And then a pass to go do that and get everything, you know, how it would be nice and organized if I ever get there.
Okay.
There was a thread on the forum suggesting a topic about, managing a collection and stuff like that. And this kind of falls into that sort of discussion. If people have questions on how I manage collections, how I suggest they manage it, what works for me, what I suggest doing and not doing, post on that thread. I'll be happy to do an episode like that with if I've got both questions for guidance and if there's anyone who would like to kind of, you know, be on that conversation. Because to me, comic collections come in differing sizes. I've got a collection, it's not a big deal. I've got a collection, it's starting to be a big deal. And I've got a collection, anyone in their right mind would be convinced it's absolutely a big deal in terms of just the logistics around it. Because my collection is somewhere north of 60,000, I think. But I really don't pay that much attention to how many I've got. It's not that big of a deal to me, but it's surprising how quickly they accumulate.
It will only be important to you when you move them. Then you'll know each and every one.
I actually don't know that I will know each and every one until after I move them, because I need more space to basically go sort them. That's one of the, when I bought the house I'm in now ages ago, one of the criteria was, do I have a good spot to put the comics? And I had a good one at the time. I've outgrown it. And that's going to be part of the criteria for the next house. Where do the comics live? So if people have suggestions on that, I'd be interested in that too. All of that having been said, we've got the preview spotlight. Its deadline is coming up. It is going to be bright and early Saturday morning, July 8th. So this episode gets released on the 3rd. There's the 4th of July. You got time to go through previews and whatnot before you light off your firecrackers and blow up your neighborhood or whatever you want to do to celebrate our independence. And what's more American than blowing stuff up? I mean, come on. So time to send in clips. Drew, you've already sent yours in. I was very pleased with that. I've actually recorded mine already. I've still got the end wrap-up to do. Obviously, I do that after the fact. Normally, I do my clips on that Saturday morning after the deadline and just, okay, somebody else picked this, so I just got to say, hey, it's my pick too. Done. Okay. But this time, I actually changed up my process and was recording my clips as I was making the picks.
Because for some of you out there who don't even look at the list of what people have said they're going to send in, should probably look.
Nah, if there's overlap, there's overlap. That's fine. But it actually, I'm glad I did it this way because Brawlinator had posted, I think it was Brawlinator who posted this, the PDF.
Oh, yeah.
For previews, which was awesome because I was able to go through it. And a couple of things I thought about picking, I decided not to. And a few things I hadn't, I decided to. So it changed up what I did clips on. But normally I get my clips decided shortly after I send in the previous month's previews. And usually a ways before I've actually seen previews. So this time having the PDF and deciding to spend the time to do it worked out well for me. Because of Comic-Con coming up, we're not going to do a teleconference in July. We will pick up in August. It's scheduled for the 19th. That is about a week later than usual, but I figured recovery time from Comic-Con is probably not a bad idea. And that gives me a little bit more time to, I don't know, maybe do a little reading, because I am already behind on my comics by a staggering and slightly unknown amount. And that is just going to compound wildly over the next couple of weeks to a month. So I may spend a little time putting together a new and improved version of the spreadsheet I used last year to track how crazy behind I am. Because I find that was really motivating when I was watching the accumulation far outstrip the reading. And that's the real reason I'm behind, is it's not just, I'm going to say it's not because I'm getting too many comics, but I think there's obviously a case that I probably am. But it's more a matter of I haven't had the time to spend doing the reading. And if I don't read, it doesn't whittle the list down much at all. Over this past week, other than the three we talked about, if I read another five or six comics, I'd be surprised. It's just been really busy for me lately, and that happens at times. Life gets in the way. So at some point, I'll find a clear weekend, maybe the first or second in August, and try to plow through a bunch of stuff, but figure I'm probably not going to be caught up for a while, so we'll be picking things maybe accordingly. So if listeners have suggestions on things that don't require me to be current on Marvel, DC, or a bunch of other stuff, that now's a great time to suggest them. Just saying. As I mentioned, I will be at Comic-Con. That is July 19th through 23rd. There's a thread on the forum about Comic-Con. Last I looked, I don't know that anyone had really posted on it. If you're going and you want to meet up and talk or whatever, shoot me an email, post on the forum, let me know. The closer you get to con, the smarter it is to email me. But even then, keep in mind, I get flooded with emails this time of year, because everybody and their dog has something they want to promote at Comic-Con and wants to make sure everybody and their dog knows about it. So kind of chaotic, but certainly I love talking with listeners and stuff like that at conventions and other opportunities for it.
What's your gut tell you on the numbers from Diamond? Is that going to happen this Friday early, or is it going to be next week or later?
It is conceivable that the numbers could come out on Friday the 7th. I think things in its favor. It gets it out of their way before Comic-Con. That's advantageous. Things not in favor of it coming out on the 7th is 4th of July.
Yeah.
So I'm preparing for it on the 7th, expecting it on the 14th, which would really
kind of...
You'll
be packing, won't you?
No.
Will you be on the road?
I will be on the road.
Ugh.
Which is why I'm preparing for it. I've got a Surface Pro 3, but I've got to make sure I've got all my new process on there and such. To where at a hotel, I can be having it crunch the numbers or whatever. And I've done this in the past. And it's a little bit of a challenge.
You're not going to try to do Mayo reports on the road, are you?
Probably not. Sam's certainly up for doing one face to face, and I think that could be fun.
Oh, yeah.
But not going to commit to that. At this point, strong chance that the Mayo reports will just, show up sometime first, second, third week of August, depending when I can coordinate, schedules and whatnot. But I am trying to arrange, a lunch or a dinner with TJ as I go through the Phoenix, neck of the woods where he's at. He's actually in, I guess he's in Mesa. Did that last year. It was a ton of fun. He is just awesome. Really smart guy. I had a really great dinner with him last year. Enjoyed that a lot. And then also with Sam, we're going to try to go through LA, either coming or going. And I enjoy hanging out with Sam too. He's just awesome. A lot of fun. Great guy. And, you know, again, when we met up last year at C2E2, that was a lot of fun too. So face-to-face stuff, there's just a different experience there than you know, you guys popping in your iPod or MP3 player or whatever and listen to me just ramble on end. You can do it face to face and interrupt me.
Or walk away.
Yeah, I get that too. I will warn people, if you see me at Comic-Con and you shout my name and I seem to be completely zoned out, it's because I'm completely zoned out. I do find con to be a little sensory overload, so I have been told in the past by what I'm going to say is a trusted source that getting my attention can be really hard. I don't think my sister was too upset with me that I had been blatantly ignoring her, but after about 4 phone calls and her waving right in front of my face at con, you know, it happens. But yeah, it's just particularly in the gaming section or TV stuff, it's hard for me to focus on all that. It's fun, but it's crazy busy.
I bet.
So like I said, if people are going to Comic-Con, please let me know. Just if you want to hang out, great. If not, that's okay too. But just knowing who's going to be there is kind of cool too. So anything else? We pretty much done.
I think that'll do it.
Cool. Join us next week as we discuss Scooby-Doo Team-Up number 27 from DC, Defenders number 2 from Marvel, and Clue number 1 from IDW.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.